Yeah, you can play the bass. That's Marcus Miller here, a little bumper music on the roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. By my calculation, today is Tuesday, and it is time for this Election Day edition of the roundtable panel at 15 minutes after 9 o'clock. Joining us today, WAMC's Alan Shartok, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, who I didn't know was on the show until a few moments ago, The Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and Communications Consultant Joe Bonilla. Good morning, all.
Good morning. Hey.
Good morning.
Everybody vote? Except Shartok?
Well, we don't have much.
No, you?
Yeah. I mean, I voted this morning, right? 7 o'clock. So.
Yeah, I'm going to vote later today.
How was the turnout, Joe?
There were a few people there, you know, milling around, but obviously it's, you know, for Albany, you know, our major election was the primary, so you only had so many people there this morning.
Well, this morning at our polling place, it was pretty crowded at 10 of 7. I got to say, I was pretty impressed. We have the Constitutional Convention, which is on there, and I know there's quite a bit about that in the Times Union, Mike. Looks like it will go down as a huge defeat.
Well, that's the prediction. There's a Siena College poll that came out that said 57% of those surveyed are voting against it. There's been a pretty strong publicity campaign to defeat this notion of having a constitutional convention. Once every 20 years under New York's constitution, you can decide whether to kind of open up the top of the engine and rework everything, and they are not too happy about that idea. A lot of people are not too happy about that idea. They're afraid that big money will come into New York, like Mercer money or the Koch brothers money, and it will result in a lot of things that we cherish being pulled out of the Constitution. Others are saying, you know, their supporters are saying that this is an opportunity to do what state lawmakers continually fail to do, you know, really put in some ethics reforms, perhaps term limits, change a few other things, streamline the processes, and get rid of some archaic language that's in there.
Alan, I mean, leading up to this, there has been a lot of advertising against it. And it seems to me a lot of strange bedfellows here who have ganged up against this.
Whatever you do mean by bedfellows.
What I'm saying is there are a wide range of groups on all political sides who are against this. Who's for it and why would they be?
But I don't get the bed part. What do you mean by the...
It's a term.
Oh.
A metaphor.
Okay. But they're not physically...
Okay,
no, but these are different, disparate organizations.
Thank you.
And individuals.
Thank you.
And individuals.
What, you think I didn't get that from the first
thing? Oh, well,
you're lecturing me? How condescending can you be?
I was just trying.
So I was just trying to have a little fun, you know
check,
what I
mean? Check,
please.
It's a little early to ask for the check, isn't it?
Okay, so here's the deal. There are good reasons to have a constitutional convention. I certainly believe that. You know, if you were going to put, for example, statewide term limits, you know, involved, that would pass so fast. Now, you remember, you have to vote on these things if the convention comes up with them. But the people, here's the reason. You know, I live in a great state, Massachusetts, so
Commonwealth.
I don't get to, what did you say?
Commonwealth.
Well, it's a commonwealth. It's also a state. Let's face it. Let's face facts.
All right.
But you know, if you had initiative and referendum like we do in the great state of Massachusetts, I'd be for it if you were going to do that. I know people will argue that in California, some of the bad guys...
Proposition 13.
Put things on that, you know, are bad. But basically, it gives the people a right to veto what the legislature is doing. I'm for that. I'm for term limits. The pro people on the Constitutional Convention have mentioned it, but believe me, that's where they should have been pushing, and they weren't. So the same guys who elect, now remember, there are three delegates from each of the Senate districts, as we all know, and then there are, I think, what, 15 at large, something like 19
yep.
or 15 at large, something like that. Now, the same guys who get elected to everything are going to get elected. They're going to get there either themselves or they don't do that so much anymore, but they used to, or their cousin Louis, who they pick to do it. And that's what turns people off about this thing. I don't like the fact that I find that people like the Koch brothers, for example, and others may be in bed together, as you say. But the fact of the matter is, the same old people will be controlling this constitutional convention, which my friend Jerry Benjamin, my best friend, who has been leading the charge on this pro, you know, says no, but there's always a chance. You have to be optimistic. You have to think that it might be generic. It might run away. You know, I think that's what turns people off.
J.P. Miller on the Empire Report page today. There are many links about the mayoral races. Syracuse, open seat there. Albany, Buffalo, Rochester, and, of course, New York City.
The biggest one, I think, or the closest one, the most competitive, will be in Syracuse, where there is a Democrat nominee and then also an independent nominee, Ben Walsh, who's the son of a former popular congressman. Polls have seen that race tightening over the last couple of days. So Syracuse, I think, will be the closest. And then, of course, the county exec races in Nassau County, Rensselaer County, and in Westchester
right,
County.
Yeah.
But up here, Rensselaer County is a humdinger, right?
A humdinger. And it is a very interesting race where you have a veteran assemblyman, Republican assemblyman, Steve McLaughlin.
Didn't he say something on a tape somewhere?
Yeah, tapes were leaked out late last summer or early September, actually, that recorded a conversation between he and a person on his staff, where a woman on his staff, where he was using very coarse language to dress her down and to, diminish her and attack her. And he apologized for that when those tapes were made public and says that is not the way he is. But his opponent, Democratic challenger Andrea Smith, is saying that is important to bring up because it shows his demeanor. It shows that he doesn't have respect for women, and it shows that he won't be able to lead a staff if he treats his current staff that way. And he says that's not the case.
So if you were handicapping this for us, Michael, it's easy to just sort of say, blah, blah, you know, this is what's happening. But are you going to tell us who's going to win?
Well, I don't know what the polling is showing, but the Democrats have never had a county executive in Rensselaer County since the office was created back in the early 70s.
Man came out of the slime.
Right. And even though Democrats hold a slight edge over enrolled Republicans, there's a big independent, non-affiliated voters in Rensselaer County, and they'll probably decide it. McLaughlin's well known. He's popular because he has always been articulate in attacking Governor Andrew Cuomo. He's thought about running against him. This could be a springboard to him running against him, and that's what a lot of people speculate. So,
by the way, I forgot at the beginning of this program to mention the email address. If you want to weigh in here, the email address is panel@wamc.org. It's panel@wamc.org. Try to keep the letters brief, to the point. Don't include links, abbreviations. Just don't do it. Can it if you can.
Don't do it.
Proofread. And try not to send more than one email per day. We get a lot. And by the way, just a gentle aside here. If we don't get to your letter, it's not because we hate you in general. It's
it's like disdain. That's all.
There are so many, you know, we get what we can get.
Some people do take it very personally.
Now, Alan, this election, at least in New York, low turnout expected.
Sure. Sure. It'll be low turnout. The press abhors any vacuum, so they try to make something out of something. I mean, we're all looking at the quote Syracuse mayoral thing. That's pretty far down the food chain.
Now, can a political scientist of your eminence
that's funny, Ray.
read any tea leaves about 2018 based on what we see here as far as Democrat Republican the tide?
Yes, they can, but I want to defer to JP on the panel, who has something to say about this.
Here are the tea leaves that I'm looking for this year that will portend to what happens to next year. In Nassau County, the county exec race between Laura Kern and Jack Martins is being fought a lot on the issue of MS-13. They're saying, how tough should we be on MS-13? The Democrats are saying, this is racism, this is race baiting, we can't stigmatize these people. And Jack Martins, a Republican, saying, forget about that. We have to have safety in our communities. This is also happening down in Virginia with MS-13. And so I think that as we look at some races like Nassau County and then the governor's race in Virginia, we can see, is MS-13 going to be a net positive for Republicans saying we need to be a law and order, or is it going to be a net positive for the Democrats saying we cannot stigmatize illegal immigrants? I think that is an issue that's not being written about a lot that will percolate to the top next year and in 2020.
I think the other race, obviously, would be Westchester County, where you have Senator George Latimer versus the current incumbent, Rob Astorino. So, obviously, if Astorino doesn't win today,
he can't be governor.
That's right. So he'll
be toast. By the way, I don't think he'll be governor anyway. So, I mean, you know.
Would he be the Republican Party candidate,
yes,
you think?
Yes, of course. Yeah. He's the same. He ran
last summer. So get a rerun of 2014.
He ran before. He doesn't have $27 million in the bank in his campaign, account. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, jumping ahead to 2018, I would remind everybody that this is going to be a contentious year. Third terms for governors in New York are very risky. They're very risky. So anything could happen there. And remember, we still have a major series of trials coming up in which Andrew Cuomo's closest friends, including one he described as his third brother, who his father liked the most, is going to be on trial for years, potential years in prison. The other thing, JP, that I would add to your analysis, your brilliant analysis, may I say, is about MS-13, is the fact that there's another potential shadow over this whole race, and that's Trump, because obviously the Democrats are going to be saying this guy's a Trumper, and trying to call him out for that, and it's tough when you get down to the local level to make that case.
I heard, or I have seen a little bit, that Stephanie Miner testing the water to possibly run for governor.
Yeah, well, Stephanie Miner, we've had her on the air here. She's been on the Capital Connection. She's terrific.
She's expanding her profile. She's taken a faculty position, or at least an adjunct position, at New York University, which will get her into the city and get her face known to New York City residents and her name known.
Oh yeah, that'll do it, Mike. Yeah. You get down into take a faculty adjunct position, and that's
well,
to
she'll
get
be
face
available
known
to the New York media, and when she speaks out, she can be on the local TV and the local public radio, et cetera, et cetera.
She's also ruled out running against John Katko, who many people believe is a vulnerable member of Congress in Syracuse. So she has not ruled out running for governor. And the fact that the Latimer Astorino race is a close race is already, in my mind, a victory for Andrew Cuomo, because Astorino, all the money that Astorino didn't spend on this race, he would have been able to use for a governor. Just because he's got this close race with Latimer, he is having to spend all of his money. Even if he beats Latimer, he will start with like zero in the bank to Cuomo's $27
right.
million.
Okay, what do I predict?
Alan, what do you predict?
I predict Astorino's going to win.
Okay. I would say Astorino as well, but given the late developments with Latimer in terms of the lack of property taxes paid, the parking tickets. I mean, I think one vehicle had over $1,000 worth of parking tickets.
Yeah, it seems like a minor thing, but he should have taken care
How
of that.
How stupid,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, what are you stupid? That you're gonna
and you had
not
all this
pay
time.
Your parking tickets? Crazy. Joe, are you sure you didn't say pick Astorino just because I did?
No, I would say if you asked me this a week ago, I would probably say Latimer up by one.
Yeah.
Now, given the latest developments, I would probably say it'll be a squeaker. It'll come down to paper for Astorino.
Yeah, paper.
Absentee ballots.
Well, yeah. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we have a minute and a half or so before we go to the BBC, so
could
perhaps
I just
a letter?
Mention that there, well, we're going to read some letters, but we only have a couple. But I also want to mention that Harry Belafonte will be at the Egg. I'll be doing the interview. I want everybody out
okay.
for this.
Now, this is just an interview. You will not be bringing the banjo and doing
no,
a duet.
No, no, and there'll be no Deo or anything like that.
Okay.
He's just going to talk about his career.
Oh, terrific.
A very distinguished career, and we can't let him down. We have to have a full house there, let's face it. So call the Egg and get yourself a ticket. I demand it.
Okay. How about a letter?
Oh, letter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The convention delegates, says Steve, our friend, who knows a lot about this stuff, are gerrymandered by the Constitution. It's not the same as the New York legislature. It's the same as the New York Senate, which is much more conservative than the state. Now, I love Steve. This is Professor Gottlieb. And I can only say, yes, I know that. And it is clear, though, that I don't want to seem defensive here, but I do want to mention that the leader of the state Senate goes to the great computer on the wall, the giant computer, and says, "Oh, great computer, draw me a district in which I cannot lose." And what's happened recently is that the great computer liked a certain mirror in a certain fable, turns around to the leader, Mr. Flanagan, and says, "Oh, Mr. Flanagan, you know, too much. There's not enough people to move around. You're screwed."
Right.
But there's no question that we know that the New York State Senate is gerrymandered and that it's conservative. End of discussion.
You know, Alan, you have often said when you have done political vox pops on Tuesday that it's the quickest way to get no calls is to talk about New York politics.
Mm-hmm.
We have done that for the first half hour of this program, therefore killing the first half hour of the program. But I promise you, after the BBC, in just a second here, we will change gears and it'll be thrilling stuff. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Tuesday morning, 9:34 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel is in session, and we have Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, the Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and Communications Consultant Joe Bonilla here, as well as fresh off his triumphant introduction of the Capitol steps Friday, WAMC's Alan Shartok. I understand it went very well Friday night.
It went very well. There were a lot of people there. We loved them all, and you know, it was great for us all. We gather once a year with the Capitol steps, but Michael called me up short.
He almost punched you during the break.
It was the disparaging remarks you made about Schenectady, the city where I live.
I didn't write those. I did not write them. The Capitol steps handed them to us and said, "We want these read in the introduction." So I love Schenectady.
Sure.
By the way, I think it's a great place. I'd like to bring my kids up there, you know, and all the rest of it. It's got parks. It's got Proctor's Theater. You know, it's got
a casino now.
It's got a casino and all the rest of it. So I love it. So, but unfortunately, and our wonderful Colleen O'Connell warned me not to read it. She said this is going to get some people annoyed.
Yeah.
What was the comment?
Well, the comment was there were lots of stuff. I was just reading what they put in front of me, and I wasn't supposed to, but I didn't realize that was the part I wasn't supposed to read.
What was it?
Well, it said there was a contest, and the first prize was a weekend in Schenectady, and the second prize was 2 weekends in Schenectady. Now I feel terrible because I love Schenectady more than life itself, you know, and I have great feelings for the people who live there, like Mike and others who live in Schenectady. It's just a short walk to the casino.
Right.
And so that
In spite of that, I think it's a great place to live.
I think so, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we're probably, treading on dangerous ground now. But congratulations on your triumphant performance. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. Keep your letters brief if you could. And Uncle Alan will read a couple.
Okay, I'll read a couple now. Please address the potential impact of abandoning the medical expense deduction, especially as it impacts seniors living in nursing homes where costs may be as high as $120,000. Aging boomers will put additional pressure on public resources if they go through their savings more quickly without the deduction. And that's Mike from Clifton Park. You know, that's a very good point, Mike, because the argument in taking the deduction away is it only helps people who really have, you know, spent a great, great deal of money on this. But this is a very good point that Mike makes. A lot of people are on Social Security and all the rest of it, and this is gonna hurt them from their meager savings. Take it, panel.
Well, if you wanted to use it as a segue into the tax bill that's being debated by the Congress now, it'd be interesting to see which of the deductions that are currently in it survive and which of the cut deductions are restored and what the end game is here and how it will go. I'm just curious to hear what people think.
Well, I think, you know, for me, the historic tax credit where you had a lot of certainly projects upstate and across the Northeast where, you know, these different buildings and projects that would not have happened without this historic tax credit. So as we look into what's going to actually parlay into tax reform, whatever it looks like, that's at least my concern there.
These are also extremely popular deductions for everybody, and this is a very, very controversial topic. Donald Trump and the Congress have shown no ability to pass any meaningful legislation since he's gotten into office, and I don't see them changing here. They're not going to be able to get anything passed.
I don't agree with you, respectfully, of course, JP, because I think that they're going to get a tax bill. But I think you have to understand what they want, what the president wants. He doesn't really care about what's in it. He wants a victory. And so I think they're willing to trade away almost every unpopular thing. Their problem, of course, is where's the money coming from? Where are they going to get the money to do this? We're talking about, you know, they can go no higher than, I think, what, 1.5, Mike, something like that?
1.5 trillion over 10 years.
Right, over
they
10
think
years.
They can absorb that. Yeah. I don't know how.
Yeah, but with all the things now, it's looking, the math, and we're all waiting to see what the pros say about scoring this, is $3 trillion. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a lot of money, and where they're going to find that, I don't know.
Well, the notion is that if they give corporations and wealthy individuals big tax reductions, they will turn around and invest more in their companies. That will create more jobs. Jobs will become more competitive. Employers will have to raise their wages, and everyone will do better.
Like the wonderful story this morning about Apple.
So Joe Bonilla brought this to our attention. It was in the Times yesterday, or maybe today. Apple revamped its overseas subsidiaries to take advantage of tax loopholes on the European island of Jersey after a crackdown on Ireland's loose rules began in 2013. That's according to the New York Times.
And that's not New Jersey. That's Jersey.
That's Jersey.
Old Jersey,
I guess. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the news outlet, and the nonprofit investigative organization cited confidential records that were obtained by the Süddeutsche Zeitung newspaper.
I would argue with that inflection a little bit.
Süddeutsche Zeitung?
Yeah, that's, I think, a little better.
Really? Okay, fine. The moves came after a U.S. Senate subcommittee found in 2013 that Apple had avoided tens of billions of dollars in taxes by using overseas havens. The paper said Apple has $128 billion in offshore profits untaxed by the U.S. Apple moved the tax home of two Irish subsidiaries to Jersey, a self-governing island in the English Channel between Britain and France. Apple didn't have immediate comment. Joe, you brought this to our attention. You go first.
So 4 years ago, CEO Tim Cook was speaking before Congress, said, well, you know, we're not one of these companies that will put our profit into a Caribbean island. Well, the island certainly is now in the English Channel versus the Caribbean. And when you look at a company like Apple, which just came out with two products in the last week as part of their iPhone series, which are going to make, you know, more billions and billions of profits, this company has over $125 billion in offshore profits that have not been repatriated back into the U.S. And you have a number of companies here, Merck, General Electric, Google, who are doing the same things. And as we are talking about tax reform, you know, certainly when we look at repatriation of these profits, it's certainly a major issue that we have to address.
I think it is. I agree with Joe's points. It's a huge case to be made that we do need to reform our tax code. We've got right now a corporate tax rate of, I think, 35%, one of the highest in the world.
Which few of the corporations pay.
Well, that's the point.
Few people pay. And so Apple and Google and all these big companies, their responsibility is to their shareholders, not to pay the U.S. government confiscatory taxes. And so that this is a place where we should certainly be working on getting a more reasonable tax code for companies in the U.S. You can't blame Apple for doing what they're doing, and Google and every other company on the planet does the same thing.
I like that word, confiscatory. That's
a great word. I mean, if a company or an individual takes a tax loophole or finds a loophole in the tax code, there's really nothing wrong with that. I kind of agree. If there's a tax deduction you can take because you have interest on your student loan, or a tax deduction you can take because you pay property taxes in your city, of course people are going to take it. The problem is that when you add up all the tax breaks, and one of the latest analyses of the proposed bill that's going before Congress is that it's going to help rich people. It's going to help poor people. People in the middle are going to get a tax break. Well, then who's going to pay for the roads and the police and the armies?
Okay,
you are.
Well, the very rich people, the multinationals. Now, a little later on in this New York Times article, and this is really an extensive piece, and I'll quote it here. Since the mid-1990s, multinationals based in the United States have increasingly shifted profits into offshore tax havens. Indeed, a tiny handful of jurisdictions, mostly Bermuda, Ireland, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, now account for 63% of all profits that American multinational companies claim to earn overseas.
See, let me take great exception to what Michael just said. I don't think there's anything legally wrong with it, but I think it's both ethically and morally wrong that the middle class gets taxed the way that we do, and that the very, very rich, the uber rich, and corporations are able to rip it off the way they do. I don't like it. I don't think it smells good. I don't think it's good for the country. So that's why I don't agree with you.
Do you think that's good? No, I'm not necessarily proposing that as being the right thing. I'm just saying that you need taxes. You need taxes to pay for the roads and the police and the government operations and clean water and clean rivers, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, most people agree on that. And then then you start building into the tax code penalties for behavior you want to discourage and tax breaks for behavior you want to promote. So if a company is going to spend, they might get a tax break. If an individual is going to buy a house, you get a tax break and all that. And then it becomes a rubric that's so complicated, it's impossible to make it work. And they're trying to make it work
and
even more.
And that's why we have K Street. K Street is a rabbit hutch of a warren of lobbyists, many of whom are ex-congressmen. They walk right across the street, and there's a little cooling off period, but they have ways around that. And then they come down, and each of them have one thing that they want to get done.
Yes.
And that's why the tax code is riddled the way it is. And I suspect this is the Full Employment Act for lobbyists that's going on right now.
All right, Joe Bonilla, last word before break.
So the really interesting part of this story was about how the rights and intellectual property of these American companies are actually being held overseas. So the ride-hailing app for Uber, Facebook social media technology, you look at the Swoosh for Nike, those are all held not in the United States, but actually in the Caribbean, which is another fleecing of America, if you look at it, whereas not just the profits, but the imagination of our country's entrepreneurs are actually going off to Bermuda or the Cayman Islands.
My gosh, you all sound like Republicans for a moment there. It's amazing. It's 9:45.
I'm scared.
And the email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll take a break. Donald Trump is in South Korea. We'll talk about that in a moment. One of the all-time great electric bass players, that's Marcus Miller here on the roundtable. And the conversation groups have broken up here during the break, and it's we're having a rollicking good time. Alan Shartok, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Joe Bonilla on the panel today. President Trump is hinting at a surprise announcement as he prepares to depart South Korea. Trump said during a toast at a state dinner being held in his honor and Seoul today that we're going to have an exciting day tomorrow for many reasons that people will find out. Hundreds of South Koreans took to the streets of Seoul for two separate demonstrations, one to show support for President Trump, the other to voice disapproval of the U.S. leader amid concerns over North Korea's nuclear threats. South Korea's presidential office said President Trump and South Korean President Moon have agreed to open working-level discussions between the countries over South Korea's potential acquisition of nuclear-propelled submarines. Moon's office says Trump and Moon also discussed possible acquisition of unspecified reconnaissance assets to better cope against North Korean threats and the development of advanced weapon systems, including finalizing a deal for more powerful missiles. President Trump urging Pyongyang to, quote, come to the table and, quote, make a deal. But as he began his visit, just three dozen miles from the DMZ, he struck a somewhat more hopeful tone. He declared that it always works out. It has to work out.
Well, I mean, I'll just first touch on just the president saying that, a surprise announcement. It's like, for him, every announcement is a surprise announcement. There's no shock to it. The only difference is that the location of where he is, and certainly the impact it will have on, you know, relations with China, relations with the Korean Peninsula, and looking forward in terms of how we, you know, engage our foreign policy, not, you know, by normal standard that we would expect from a president, but from 140 characters on Twitter.
Yeah, and you're right. You point something out, which is that he often lies. So he'll say something like, wait till you see tomorrow. It'll be great, 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 great. And then tomorrow never comes. Or if it is, I suspect it's going to have a lot to do with an agreement with South Korea to support the military-industrial complex in this country by buying even more stuff, because he went on and on about how great our weapons development was yesterday, and how we had all of these, how we had all of these things. So you know, it could be any of that, but it certainly isn't that North Korea has come to the table.
I think the goal of a lot of these foreign trips by the president is that there are no major gaffes, and President Trump is a guy who's prone to gaffes from time to time.
He goes off script.
I think you probably agree,
he's,
right?
He's gaffe prone.
And so he hasn't had a gaffe thus far. When he left, you know, his campaign manager had just went under indictment. So this trip has served to separate himself from that a little bit, and hopefully, hopefully he's getting productive meetings with Chinese leaders on how to deal
and
with North Korea and Putin.
Yeah.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I'm curious to see what will happen when he does go to Beijing and how he's treated. I understand he's going to be treated quite well when he gets to China.
He'll be tweeted right.
And he'll be tweeting about how well he is treated when he is in China. You know, President Xi just was elevated to some grandiose, like,
near Mao levels.
Right, near Mao level, and the president of the United States has been praising that, probably quite a bit jealous of that, but it really makes you wonder who really is the leader of the free world, or the leader of the world as we know it, and always was regarded as the president of the United States. People may start turning to China for that leadership now, which is kind of too bad.
China would like that.
Well, I think, you know, certainly the Chinese also said that this would be a state visit plus. So whatever a regular state visit would be.
They're going to outdo the Saudis.
Right. And so, but the other thing, too, looking at the role of China in the world, I mean, this is going to be the first opportunity for President Xi to be seen as a co-equal with the president of the United States. And this is the first time in modern history that this has happened, and at least, you know, since Mao. But, you know, the other part of it is to look at how the president will actually react to President Xi in Beijing. You know, we saw the interactions in Mar-a-Lago in Florida earlier this year. It would be different when we're on basically Chinese soil for that.
Well, I can only imagine he will be respectful, and he'll enjoy the pomp and circumstance of the whole thing.
It's certainly. And
I agree. I think you're right. Yeah. They'll treat him really nice and elevate him, you know, and promote him, and he'll tweet about it, and it will be great.
Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. It's the Roundtable Panel, panel@wamc.org. And we have some letters.
We do, Raymond. McLaughlin emulating Trump and calling the Times Union fake news was enough to turn me off him. No autocrats. And, you know, what we try to do is discourage Election Day electioneering here. So, but I read that one.
By the way, before you read the next letter, didn't we have a plan where you took the recycle bin over to your side, so you're not throwing these back to me?
You know, you're so right, big
man. I must confess, this irritates me.
Are you rearranging the studio? Is that authorized?
Yeah. If there's one thing that we don't want to do, it's irritate Ray, because, you know, he gets mean.
Well, you've been doing it for 20 years. I think you enjoy it.
This is compounded by the fact that he just had his wisdom tooth.
I had some surgery
taken out.
Yesterday,
yeah.
Yes.
And they gave him drugs and all the rest of it.
Sure.
So that should have made him happier. But instead, you know, he's acting even more honorary than usual. And by the way, when you take your wisdom tooth out, there's a reason they call it wisdom tooth. Okay, so it creates a problem.
Read on, McDuff.
Okay, good morning, panel. Happy Election Day. Would you be willing to remind the good listeners that open enrollment is open right now at healthcare.gov, and it's only open till December 15th. The budget for outreach has been slashed by the meanie-in-chief, so it's up to us to spread the word. Thanks for all you do, and thank you for a wonderful show at the Egg on Friday.
Aha!
Take that, Mike.
Well, they're obviously not from Schenectady, Al.
No, I love Schenectady. What are you talking about?
I mean, there is a grand tradition of using Schenectady as a
there
part
is.
Of I mean,
even
George
Groucho
Burns.
Marx. Groucho remember Marx when he said, hey, take a memo. We're going to Schenectady. Right. How do you spell it, boss? Change that. We're going to Troy.
Naomi says, hi, panel.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
No, New York politics is fascinating. Just need to get rid of Republicans and put progressives, and we'll all shine. Loves the discussion, says Naomi.
Okay, well, that's good. Thank you for that. We appreciate it.
Okay, and Robert says, panel, it's the voters of New York State choose to have a constitutional convention. No. See, now there is what you've been talking about, Raymond. There was obviously a word changed by the spell checker. The word was if got changed to it's.
Okay.
So now it's if the voters in New York State choose to have a constitutional convention, how are the delegates chosen, and can anyone be a delegate? Yeah, if you're a citizen, you can run, and you have to go get the papers, and you got to fill them out, and you got to do all that.
When was the last time we had one in New York State?
67?
Yeah. Something like that. And did anything of substance come out of it?
No, they didn't put up...
They screwed it.
Yeah, they messed it up.
Why?
They should have put up individual what they did, changes, and they put up one big package, and it just got blown away.
And the one big package contained something like a revision, I believe, in the Blaine Amendment on funding of religious schools. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, so it had a poison pill in it.
Well, in any case, can anybody do it? The answer is yes, and I encourage you if it happens, which it won't.
Right, they come from each Senate district, and there's some predictions that because— Pretty much, even though the Senate is controlled by Republicans in a coalition with some independent Democrats.
And it's gerrymandered.
Right. And it's gerrymandered. It would still, Democrats, progressive Democrats, probably would be in control of the Constitutional Convention. And, I mean, that's one assessment.
Did your newspaper endorse a Constitutional Convention?
We did. We say, let's give it a try. Not everybody agrees with that opinion, but that was the newspaper.
What was the rationale for that?
Well, it's that it's an opportunity to fix a lot of things that are wrong. The legislature refuses to do any real meaningful ethics reform, and they're not going to vote in term limits. They're not going to vote in penalties and restrictions on campaign finance, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not going to do it. Let the voters try to do it.
One of the fascinating things with the Constitutional Convention is that obviously anybody can vote, I mean, run to be a delegate, but including existing lawmakers. So they have an opportunity to actually double their salary if they're a delegate.
It's the same salary as a state lawmaker. So if they themselves become a delegate, they'll get paid twice during the Constitutional Convention period.
Well,
that turns people off. Yeah.
Governor Cuomo's spokesman was quoted in the Times Union
as saying, "As a party,
It is not. It is not as a party. It is Abby Faucheur. I hope I'm saying that right. But Abby says governor will not be voting for the Constitutional Convention because it does not offer enough protections to prevent the status quo and special interests from governing.
Well, and that's an 11th hour. He did that
yesterday. He tweeted
that,
But what I saw as soon as I read it on the Empire page was this morning was that the governor put his finger up into the air to see which way the wind was blowing and decided it's going to lose, so I may as well be against it. Now, at some point, he was for it.
He's for the concept. And his dad, Mario Cuomo, used to constantly say, well, get a constitutional convention and fix the problem. You know, that was one of his throwaway lines.
Sure. My question is, why only every 20 years? Why not every 10 years?
The wisdom of the state, the people who passed a state constitution way back when.
And remember that you can that the legislature can call a constitutional convention anytime they want to.
Yeah, like they're gonna.
No, because they don't want to do that. C. Eric wrote us a note. Please discuss the third ballot question regarding land transfers. I don't understand the consequence of voting either way. Thank you. Well, this is one which I think is fairly easy. Yeah. Everybody's for it. The problem is that if you want a bicycle path next to an existing trail, you can't have it now because it's violative of the forever wild part of the Constitution. So they come up with this Fischlugana idea that
it's a pretty clever idea.
Yeah, that you can have something like 250 acres and you could take a little bit out to do any of these things.
Right. I mean, even to put like a sewer line in or an electric line in, you need to go technically to the state constitution amendment process to do it.
Okay, so that's from Sierra.
And then we'll have one more letter and then we'll take a break for news.
Imagine if the defense budget could be slashed. Imagine schools, hospital infrastructure that could be built. Keep imagining, because as long as lobbyists have a chokehold on our legislature, it will remain a dream, says Susan.
Okay. Our email address is panel@wamc.org. And thank you for keeping your letters brief. We'll get to more of them after we take a break for news. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Oh, The mic's on. Oh, thank you very much for that, Elizabeth Hill. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock on a Tuesday. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. This is the back 40 portion of the program, the last 20 minutes or so of the program. And Mike Spain is here from the Times Union, The Empire Report's J.P. Miller, communications consultant Joe Bonilla, and WAMC's own Alan Shartok. And our email address here is panel@wamc.org. And, Alan, I understand we have a few emails to plow through here.
That's right. Good morning, Roundtable team.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wants to know about what was said here about no Trump gaffes yet on Asia trip. Takes great exception to that from Paul. Good morning, again. No Trump gaffes on this trip.
Good morning.
To Asia? How did you miss the multiple embarrassing gaffes and insults he made in his national press conferences with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe yesterday? This was so painfully embarrassing to the U.S. and directly insulting to the Japanese. He insulted the special gift from the Prime Minister and incredibly insulted their economy. This is so bad. Not sure how you missed this. And that's from Paul in Altamont.
We're silent.
Yeah. No, when I came home yesterday, my lovely and wonderful wife said, you can't imagine how he's messing up over there, and quoted all of the potential gaffes, you know, that he made during that time. Panel, says Richard, Trump and Xi. It is not clear to me why the President of the United States, having 350 million citizens, should somehow be held as having higher esteem than the leader of China, a nation of over 1 billion citizens. And that's from Richard. And it's it says here, I don't know if this is, he intended to do this, but he says all Slalbany, S-L-B-A-N-Y. I hope that wasn't an insult or something.
Wouldn't you think that the leader of the free world, the leader of the biggest democracy, and a leader of a coalition of other democracies and free countries should have a higher standing than a country that does repress people as they do in China? Although it's changing and it's evolving and maybe for the better, but it still is a repressive government. And if you dissent against the government, you're going to be in jail.
No, China's a dictatorship. No question about it. However, there are people who think that we are sliding into that ourselves with the President of the United States, you know, who basically has a 38% approval rating in some polls, and some polls lower, and basically is leading the country in a way that they don't want to be led. Now, some people might maintain that that's a form of dictatorship.
Well, the great thing is that the people can vote out Donald Trump in 2020 if they don't think that he's done a good job, which they can't really do in China.
Exactly. That's a very good point, JP.
Our email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Mike Spain, you guys have details in the TU on a story. I was a little out of it yesterday coming out of the surgery, but this story out of the Hilltowns outside of Albany, quite something.
Yeah, a man from the Albany County hill town of Knox has been charged with multiple weapons offenses after police say they found several high-powered weapons, including grenades, grenade launcher, an AR-15-style rifle at his home. Sheriff deputies received a call from this emotionally disturbed man. He threatened to take some harm on himself, and they began to look into it. When they got to the house, they found a locked room where all these firearms and explosives were stored. They eventually did take the man into custody. He had gone to East Greenbush and checked into a motel there, but they found him, and now he's... you know, he's been charged and he's going to face these charges. Family members say that he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder after serving in the military. But it is an anecdote that shows that people can amass enormous amounts of firearms. And now, in this particular case, nothing happened, thank goodness. But you don't know what people are going to do. I mean, you think about what happened in Las Vegas. You think about what happened just this Sunday in San Antonio, Texas. And just having the availability of so many weapons that can be so destructive is really a reality in our culture these days.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly an outrage emerging in the country from both gun supporters and gun opponents that Congress, after what happened in Las Vegas and now just a couple weeks later what's happening in San Antonio, that Congress has done nothing. People can still go and get that bump stock that made the Vegas shooting so deadly. And
even bump stocks. I mean, you know, what bothers me about this this latest terrible, terrible tragedy in Texas is that immediately the president over in Asia is saying that this is a mental health issue. It's not a gun issue. You know, they said the same thing after the
same mental health issue,
right.
The same mental health budget items that he has slashed right out of the budget.
Oh, well, right. I mean, there's that level of some irony and hypocrisy even. But the Republicans, even the ones from our own Capital Region area, like Elise Stefanik, she's saying, you know, she keeps the families in their prayers. You know, why don't they do anything? John Faso, the Republican congressman from Kinderhook, says, "My heart goes out to the victims and families." But, you know, they're not really doing anything about changing this culture and changing the availability.
Why not, Mike?
Well, because they are supported by people who don't want them to, or the NRA. You know, the NRA is a very, very, very powerful lobby. And they're not really out there to protect gun rights. They're out there to protect the profits of the manufacturers of firearms, and they are doing a darn good job.
Which brings me right back to the original point I made about a sort of dictatorship in this country. Overwhelming numbers of people want sensible gun legislation in this country, overwhelmingly when polled. And yet we don't do it, and they don't do it. And they don't do it, A, because the districts are gerrymandered and, you know, there's part of that. But they don't do it because they just don't want to not be a congressman or a senator.
I'm interested in this term that is bandied around often, sensible gun legislation.
What is the definition of what sensible would
give
be?
Give me Alan's definition of sensible.
Well, my definition of sensible is taken all away from everybody.
You see, I think that may be a lot of people's.
See, when they hear you say that, Alan, that's when it all kind of falls apart.
But I'm more than willing to settle for anything. Mental health checks, people who making sure that, as in this case of this last guy, when the Army should have told the FBI, the Air Force should have told the FBI and didn't, that he shouldn't have a gun. It's a regulation. It's required. They didn't do it. So I think we can tighten what we have. And I'd be willing to go with almost anything along the lines. I've told this story once too many times. I'll tell it again. I had a colleague at the university who thought, when I started to be me, who thought that I should be protected. So he said, "I'm going to get you a shotgun. I'm going to get you a shotgun. At the time, it'll cost you $100." So I said, "Okay." So no money had transpired. I told Roselle I was going to put it in the basement and we would at least have it if something terrible happened. And Roselle said, "And what will your next wife think about that?" So
crystal
that,
clear there, right?
Yeah, so that was pretty clear about, you know, what the limitations are. And I told the guy, he got me an extra $50 for something I had never paid for to begin with. But yeah, I mean, I think that
People do want Congress to do something. I thought this was profound from our junior senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand. She said, "Thoughts and prayers are not going to stop the next mass shooting. Plain and simple, Americans are being slaughtered and Congress is refusing to protect them."
That's right.
Really what's going on.
Yeah, she's right.
Well, I think at least the baseline, at least have the conversation to start legislation, but we're not even having that from either FASA or Stefanik or any of the Republican members from here.
And they control the show.
And I don't think there needs to be sweeping legislation there needs to be something done that will hopefully lower the outrage. I mean, imagine if we just had one mass shooting a year rather than one every 2 weeks. That would be an improvement. And what you do have in the president is President Trump is not only playing to gun people, but he himself is a believer in gun rights. He's one of the few people in New York City who had a license to carry a concealed weapon, as other people in his office at Trump Tower. And it is a very challenging issue. There are other parts of the country where there is simply a gun culture, and this is doctrine for them. And they make valid points as well that the other people that stopped this shooter were good intentioned people that were carrying guns. They have valid points on their side as well.
I know their point, and I also know that almost every politician, especially on the pro gun side, says or even the Democrats, I have no problem with people who go out in the woods and kill deer. Well, I get it. I almost ran into one this morning, and there are a lot of deer.
They kill a few more.
They're proliferating. I get that, but on the other hand, I think there are other ways to do that, and there's baiting and there's other things that one can do. And frankly, amongst us, just here on the panel, because nobody else is listening.
You got that right. Except the crickets.
I feel for the deer.
For the deer?
The poor, poor deer.
Do you know that it's estimated that 64,000 deer are struck by motor vehicles in New York every year? That's a lot of very dangerous
things
happening.
When I'm coming over on the I-90 and the freebie 90, as we say around here, the freebie 90, in the morning, there are messes on the road all over the place.
Huh. Well, I always love
the sign saying, deer crossing next 7 miles. And what exactly are you supposed to do about that?
Well, outside of our listening area a little bit, but down in New York City, to curb the deer population, Mayor de Blasio has introduced giving deers vasectomies, which he's gets a lot of interesting commentary for. You haven't heard about that one?
No. It's good. Just counting the moments till the program's over.
Look, if a guy wants to go out and feed his family by shooting some venison and bringing it home, I think that, and keeps our roads, fewer deer on our roads, I think that's a wonderful thing.
I see your point.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Say, did you see this one in the Washington Post, or I think it was in USA Today as well? Woman who flipped off Trump's motorcade gets fired.
Yeah.
You see this? So White House photographer.
Protective First Amendment speech?
White House photographer traveling with the president snapped a shot of the president's motorcade passing a bicyclist when he left a golf course in Virginia last week. And this woman told the Huffington Post, he was passing by, my blood just started to boil. And I'm thinking he's at the golf course again. And, well, she flipped him the bird a number of times, she says. And she then went to tell her HR department at work, and they said, well, we got to part ways.
Well, she had worked for the communications department of this federal government contractor.
Yeah.
And the company, from what I remember, had a policy that said no obscene imagery on social media.
Yeah.
And it had, she just flipped the president off and not put it up on her profile picture. That might have made a difference. But she was touting it herself. The company obviously took that action. Now, whether that's retaliatory or not, that's to be seen.
I think every company has policies such as...
Do we have that here?
Well, I know NPR does, and we sort of follow those rules.
We do not.
No, well, I do.
I don't do what those people do.
Generally speaking, would it be preferable for your staff members here at WAMC not to use obscene gestures in their social media?
No, you make a good point. I have to say, we had a guy here a number of years ago when the Curtis Sliwa's group came to town, and he went and he put on one of those hats or something like that. I don't know if he put on a hat, but he protested with them, and we took great exception to that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are limits.
All right. That's all I got. What do you got?
That's it? That's the end of the program?
Well, I mean, we could...
How about some predictions? Come on. Okay. What's going to happen at the Constitutional Convention?
Right. Fair enough. Constitutional Convention goes down.
Okay.
McLaughlin wins, if anybody knows about that.
Westchester County Executive.
No, go to Virginia.
And Bo Deedle wins in New York
Virginia.
City, yes.
Virginia, the Democrat is behind. I think the Republican wins in Virginia. And that's because it's only 3 points, and the Democrats up by 3 points. And that's with Trump and everything else. But as you said before in the break, Mike, that is going against the progress is going against the Democrats.
Right, it's going down. It's getting closer. Not
so the Republican wins in Virginia.
How about Roy Moore down in Alabama, Senator Roy?
He wins big time. Yeah, he wins. It tells you a lot about Alabama, George Wallace, and all the rest of it. One of my favorite people in the world was Judge Robert Jones. When I worked in Congress, He represented a place in Alabama, and he was a former judge, and I loved the man. I just loved him. And when Wallace came around trying to get people to vote against the Civil Rights Act, that guy came and he hid in our office, hid under the couch.
Yeah.
So they couldn't find him. You know, that's Alabama.
So you think Gillespie wins in Virginia? I mean, that state is becoming bluer and bluer by the day.
You heard what I said.
Okay.
He thinks otherwise, Ray.
You think the Republican will win?
Yeah.
In Virginia?
We got a blue state here. George Pataki won 3 times.
And Virginia has gone back and forth in the last 16 years as well, so it would not be surprising if...
But isn't it common sort of wisdom that Virginia goes against the party that is in the White House?
Yes.
So,
but we no longer subscribe to common wisdom in politics, Ray.
These are strange times indeed. And, you know, if you follow the media, you think that the Alabama race is much closer than you think. But you think Moore is a shoo-in.
I don't know.
He's a senator in Alabama.
Yeah, and he won a big primary.
Yeah, he's got momentum. I don't see him.
And
he was elected judge after he was removed from the bench.
Yes.
And then he was elected back to that position. So I think people are behind him.
You also have the New Jersey governor's race as well.
Yep.
With Phil Murphy leading.
The Democrat wins.
Well, that's a very blue state. I mean, don't you think, what's his name, won 8 years ago sort of by fluke?
No.
Chris Christie?
No, yeah, Chris Christie.
Look, I think New Jerseyans are people with various things running through their bodies and their minds. You know,
as opposed to
that.
New Yorkers.
We've got that in Schenectady. We've got it, you know, all kinds of places. No, really. So I'm thinking that the Democrat wins there because Christie is so low right now. And this woman who's running on the Republican ticket was a former, is lieutenant governor to Christie. So she'll help be held responsible for his antics.
And Bob Menendez may still get to stay in the Senate. Did you see that?
Bob Menendez, I think their jury deliberations starting today. And what's interesting about the Christie New Jersey thing is he came into power beating a billionaire Goldman Sachs banker. And now he is leaving power. And who is coming in? But this guy, Phil Murphy, is a billionaire Goldman Sachs banker coming in to run New Jersey again.
Yes, but Menendez.
Menendez is an interesting case.
It's a very important case because the Democrats desperately need that vote in the Senate.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll leave it there. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We talked a lot of politics today.
We did. And
but before we go, you got the Harry Belafonte show coming up.
I was going to mention that on Saturday night. You call the egg.com, or go to the egg.com.
What will you talk to him about?
Oh, I don't know yet. He's had a very distinguished career. He's had guts unlike most Americans. He's stood up, and he has taken many chances with his own life in terms of some of the marches and gone down south and a lot of this. This is an amazing man, and I demand that everybody come out and honor him.
You demand it.
Yeah, I demand it.
You know, it's another interesting thing about Belafonte, I believe he is on the New York City Mayor's Statue Commission, who will be recommending which statues in New York City are oppressive to people and which statues are not oppressive.
Well, good question really to ask him about, Alan. That's
really interesting because I didn't know whether you said statute committee or statue.
Statutes.
There's a big difference between the two of those.
Statues get kept up.
Hello, statue. Okay, we are done.
Are you sure?
And Alan Shartok, thank you very much.
As always, you are more than welcome, Raymond.
Joe Bonilla, thank you, sir.
As always.
Mike Spain, I'll give you a little more heads up next time.
Pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
I apologize. And J.P. Miller, thank you very much for being here. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.